Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the only show on the internet where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, swords, dragons, robots, things like this. And tonight, of course, as we do every Sunday night, we are gathered here to recap, review, and share our elucidating thoughts on the latest episode of House of the Dragon, a show about dragons, a show about people, a show about war, a show about conflict, a show about us. My name is Dan Selke, and I am here with Daniel Roman of winnerscoming.net, here with Natalie Zamora of fansided.com, and Camila Dominguez of Fansided Network, all around people as well. How are you all doing tonight?
Doing great.
Spectacularly. Banger of an episode. I can't wait to talk to you all about it.
All right, Daniel, why don't you start it off then? Why did you find this one?
Oh, man.
I don't think we know the title yet. They've been hiding it from us like candy.
Let's see.
What made this one
I have it
a
right
banger
behind me
of an episode for you?
No title. No title yet.
Is it Old Feuds and Bad Blood?
Oh, wait. The Burning Mill is what I see on Max, which I don't.
Burning Mill?
Okay. The title's coming in hot, as hot as the flames which scorched the burning mill. Well, starting off there, I guess, I loved getting some Blackwood and Bracken feud stuff right at the top. You know, the Blackens and or the Brackens and Blackwoods, longstanding Game of Thrones houses that have hated each other so long that they don't even remember why they hate each other. Kind of the perfect metaphor for the dance. So loved that. There was just a lot of good stuff, a lot of juicy stuff. And one thing in particular that I'm so curious to kind of hear everyone's thoughts about, whether it was really good or insane. And that, of course, is the ending. But we probably have stuff to talk about before we get there. So who wants to go next? What else? How are you guys all feeling about this episode? I enjoyed it a lot.
I liked it. Honestly, can I just propose, I'm all in favor of going where our interests lead us. If we want to talk about the end first, I'm down for that. I think we should go where our passions draw us. And yeah. I would love to kick things off by talking about what I will call the sister act portion of the episode, where Rhaenyra Targaryen disguises herself as a nun to avoid detection, which is basically the plot of Sister Act. And I mentioned that because that movie is a comedy and this is a drama. And you're right. I think there is a question of, was this absurd and borderline sitcom levels of silly, or was it, or did it play fair and did it work for you? Camila, I know that you were a fan of the ending. What about it spoke to you?
I love just seeing, because if I remember correctly, Fire and Blood is very much like green leaning, and they make the greens a little like made them like a little better than the blacks, whatever. Well, my perception was wrong, but I did find that it was really cool seeing things that were not just documented in history and Westeros history. Thought it was very important. It really shows that, you know, Rhaenyra is trying her best to not let this go the way it's going to go down. And Alicent feels like everything is just so lost to the point where, like, nope, it doesn't even matter anymore. Like, this, I started this path, and this is the path I'm just going to keep walking. It's too late. It was just a very like touching and emotional like scene. The moment where they're like, oh right, Aegon the Conqueror.
Loved that.
Wow, it was like that was just like an oh crap moment.
I like that she didn't fold. I like she's still that Allison still stuck with like there was no mistake. It's fine. Stop talking to me. I'm leaving. Go away, yeah. Natalie. What'd you think of it?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I feel like a common annoyance I have with a lot of shows and movies where there's a misunderstanding. I'm like, if you just told them, the problem would be solved if you just talked about what the issue is. Obviously not the case here, but I'm glad that, I don't know, I'm glad that Allison knows. And I feel like it makes it a little bit better that she knows now and she's still going to go through with it. Now it's not a misunderstanding and there's something that's purposeful. So I do like that. Was it forced and maybe a little silly? Yeah, but I feel like let's just keep it moving. I'm fine to keep it moving and just say, yeah, that was good.
I am too. It worked for me more or less. Julie thought it worked for her. It was great. I liked it. It worked. It was fun seeing in the same room. I thought it danced to the edge though. It was like a few. Yeah. If they set it up any less carefully, it would have been like, this is ridiculous. But I thought they did play fair. I thought they were like, okay, so we know you can sneak in because Damon snuck in. We know that they used to be in the same church when they were kids. There's a scene where they were hanging out. So that was kind of a nice little callback to that. We know Mysterion knows what things are going around. The nun outfit did look good. I mean, it did hide her hair. I did think it was convincing. She looked good as a Septa or a nun. I hope they make Sister Act 3 at some point because I love that franchise. And I did like the conversation too. And I'm glad she knows. I'm glad she said there's... It's too late. I am ready for some blood now, though. I'm ready for folk to start chopping and dicing and slicing. Do you feel like the show is being, I don't know, if Rhaenys or Rhaenyra one more time looks into the camera solemnly and tells me that we have to avoid bloodshed at all costs and a great war is about to start, I'm going to be on the side of whoever stabs somebody first.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I know what you mean.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By honoring your sacred vocation of education, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. At Grand Canyon University, our online bachelor's, master's, and doctoral education degree programs allow you to balance online coursework with observational and hands-on experience in the field. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Yeah, I feel like that's fair. I think the Allison and Rhaenyra conversation was supposed to kind of be putting a pin in that. Like,
sure.
This was the last chance for anyone to talk this through. And now that hope's gone.
Yes.
So I'm sure we'll get at least, we did see, I think, in the preview for next week's episode, Rhaenyra might at least say, I tried to stop the war one more time before the battle is joined. That scene of Rhaenyra and Allison, I totally agree, Natalie and Dan, with what you guys said about it. Kind of dancing right to the edge of being like a little silly, but the thing that made it work for me, that made it really forgivable. And like the scene itself, I enjoyed a lot. The nun outfit worked. The sister act reference is there to be made. Obviously, that is the reference for that sequence. But it occurred to me that like, we don't know how things are going to go down later on in the show with later Fire and Blood material, but there's a decent chance this is the only time we would get to see Alicent and Rhaenyra on screen together. So yeah. It's of the season. So it's, I can kind of like forgive them for, you know, having this borderline, like almost silly plan to have them talk, because otherwise we would never see them talk to each other at all this season. So yeah, I liked it, but I agree with you. I'm ready for, you know, the throwdown that we are going to get next week. It's going to be brutal.
It looks like a lot of our commenters agree with us that, yeah, that they're ready for action. I liked it too. As long as this was the last time they try to hash it out with words, I'm ready.
I think it's safe to say that it is the last time.
I hope so. Yeah. Based on the preview, it seems like it, because Rhaenyra says something like, "Now that I know, that her dad really wanted her." Yeah.
She now knows.
We have Julie in the comments saying, "I think this isn't really a big thing of the plot, but as good a thing as anything to go to next." She loves seeing Millie Alcock again as young Rhaenyra Targaryen in a dream sequence. What do we think of Daemon Targaryen's little solo adventure off in Harrenhal? Which I'll say up front, now that everyone is kind of spread out and doing their own thing, and like Daemon's in Harrenhal, and Kristen's on the road, and Rhaenyra's in Dragonstone, and Alicent's in King's Landing, it does feel more like Game of Thrones to me than it ever did before, because that was the show's deal, right? It was like all these characters doing their own thing at different places, and we kind of caught up with them in each episode. Whereas House of the Dragons, it's been very different. It's been like everyone's together. And now I did get more of a Game of Thrones vibes episode than I've ever gotten before, including partially because of Daemon's little excursion. What do we think of Daemon's little excursion?
Well, I'll start out in the silence. I'll break the silence. I love Daemon's excursion. That, I think, was one of my favorite elements of the episode. You know, I like that he rode up on Caraxes. I love the shot of him on Caraxes on top of Kingspire Tower, looking down on Harrenhal. I think that is, every time, I've seen it a few times now, and I get chills each time. I like that they slowed it way down to give him time to explore all the stuff with Sir Simon, or Lord Simon Strong. I really enjoyed the Millie Alcock cameo. I loved it. I shouted, "She lied" at my TV the first time I saw it, because, you know, Millie Alcock denied it. You know, she lied through her teeth saying she wasn't coming back to the show.
As she should.
As she should. I do think, obviously, it's a cool way to get her to cameo. It is also interesting that Daemon is seeing teenage Rhaenyra in this vision, considering he started seducing her as a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
So that says some interesting things about Daemon as a character, I think. And I'm curious if we'll see more of her. Natalie and Camilla, who wants to go next? What do you think of Daemon and Millie?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was, you know, quick enough that it definitely worked. Yeah. I love Millie, so it was really great to see her again. I thought it was interesting. I mean, you know, there's a lot of creepiness going on with Daemon with their relationship, but I know, you know, Rhaenyra mentioned their last conversation, you know, "When I was a girl, I took you as a challenge," that kind of thing. So I wonder if that's what I was thinking of her as a girl again. That's what I'm going to say, and not it be some type of creepy thing. But I really, really liked it. I hope, honestly, as much as I love her, though, I hope it's not a repeated thing. I am very much not a fan of the Dexter, like every person who's passed on in his life is now just haunting him. I don't really like that. But I thought it worked really well. And I loved all the Harrenhal scenes. And as a horror fan, I just love anything creepy and like trippy and weird. So it all really worked for me. And Alice Rivers, which we'll talk about. I'll kick it to Camilla because I know you love her.
Yes, I know. I'm very excited to see her on this, and especially being creepy. I was a little like skeptical about the actress. I'm so sorry, I forget her name. But she
Gail Rankin.
What is it?
Gail Rankin.
Yes, she did so good in that scene. I was truly creeped out. And I like what it's alluding to, and just how it just makes her case as like a really interesting character. But no, I loved the Harrenhal scene altogether. I thought everything with Simon was hilarious, and just the whole like the throne. Yeah, the giant sword with the swords, or the giant chair with the swords on it. Like, oh, nice, yeah. Nice.
I mean, like, we've all read Fire and Blood, so it's kind of a weird question to ask us, but they've changed things a bit so that Daemon is working on Rhaenyra's behalf. He didn't blink an eye when Simon said, "I would declare for Rhaenyra," but they're also, like, they're not quite talking. He's kind of in a different place. I took, like, the don't call me my prince, call me your grace thing as, like, does he want to make a run at the Iron Throne for himself? Is he thinking about that? I thought the dream was guilt, right? I mean, it's not like a hard dream to disencode. Right. Like, he feels guilty about that whole, oops, I killed a child thing. He feels maybe even a little bit guilty about seducing like a 15-year-old girl. Far be it for him to go that far. Yes.
I have a thought about the honorific. I don't know if you want to finish what you're saying.
No, go ahead.
Because I do have a... So I think that the Daemon correcting Simon Strong to say your grace instead of your prince, my read on that is that it's partially Daemon trying to figure out his place as the king consort, which, like, there's literally never been one in the history of Westeros. So Simon makes an assumption about what his title will be as king consort or queen consort. I don't know which it would technically be, which kind of underlines the point. And he calls him prince. And then Daemon says, you know, your grace, which your grace, if I recall correctly, is only reserved for the king. The queens don't typically get called your grace, I don't think. I could be wrong about that. But I think there's a little bit of that push and pull for Daemon of even he is still figuring out, like, what do people refer to you as based, you know, the consort. So yeah, I like that they're doing that. That's kind of juicy too, and interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like how when we eventually have a female president or Pete Buttigieg who has like a husband or like a guy, people call it like, is it the first gentleman? I sort of think we know. And I bet we'll have that discussion when we actually get into it. Probably the same thing. Probably right. Camilla, you were saying something?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the that scene as well. And I thought that one of the things that kind of made him look sideways at Simon when he called him your prince was maybe some sort of disrespect towards Rhaenyra's claim to the throne. And he was just like referring like, okay, like your grace, like, yes, I'm the consort, whatever, but your grace, because my wife is the queen, you know, like she is the queen, the rightful queen. I kind of thought of it that way as well, a little bit.
See that? But I feel like you are giving Daemon as much credit as possible, which I don't blame for.
I just watch it like enough to pinpoint different options.
There are definitely different options.
Just misunderstood.
Yeah. As Robert Harris says, he's Cersei your grace through Game of Thrones, so it can happen.
Yeah, and I said this before last episode, the podcast episode, like from black sheep of the family to black sheep of the family, he's kind of relatable. So I try to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
let's go with that black sheep thought, because there are several black sheep in this story's episode.
Nice.
Also, I like the dream things. I thought it was fun. It was different because Game of Thrones had like almost none of this.
No,
I don't want them to go too far with it, but this was good. This was fun. They're getting a lot of mileage out of the baby decapitated prop head, and you know, once you make a good prop, might as well.
Like,
go for
we
it.
Made this thing. Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about my favorite black sheep, King Aegon, who I don't think quite dominated the episode like he did the last two. But so I was going to say Alf, the alien.
Alf.
Oh, Alf. Yes. Okay.
But no, let's start with Aegon because, I want to talk about
probably
him too.
My favorite scene of the episode, I think my personal fave was him getting dressed up in armor and these idiot yes men he appointed to the King's Guard around and being like, you look great. Love it. Loves it, fierce work. And then he wants to fly out and join Kristen on his march. And then Larys has to kind of like just dangle some keys in front of the baby to see if he can distract him long enough with something else. So I love the manipulation was like, so you know, my king, they be out here saying that you were manipulated into leaving and you don't want to look like a weakling, do you? So he used his fear of manipulation to manipulate him into staying.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, honestly. Nice job, Lara Strong. You'll make a good master of whisperers. I also like how Aegon is like kind of torn between, do I want to fool around with my yes men drinking buddies and go out and help get this young squire laid, or do I want to like chastise them for not taking their job seriously? Mm-hmm. I like that being where he's looking in the mirror. I think if he looks in the mirror, he must never know what he's thinking or what he's going to do next at this point. Aegon continues to be entertaining for me.
Yes. He's very entertaining.
He has no idea what he's doing. So yeah, that's very entertaining. I love how everyone's around him is obviously they're being respectful because he is their king. I'm not going to see the king, not my king, but they're all just, they're all like, no, like you're not doing that. And it's just very, very funny.
There's some good stuff. And then, of course, the bar, the tavern scene was fun. Also, okay, can I say, these sets are crazy. The Harrenhal Hall set
crazy.
Looks like huge. I could, like, move my entire house, my family's house, everyone I know's house in that. I just want to live in it. Make this an Airbnb. Like, that tavern set, it's like one scene. They went through the door. They panned around.
There's
it's
a crazy
so
one.
Yeah. Yeah. They got some really pretty, pretty stuff. What did we think of Aegon's wild night on the town?
The best ever.
Camilla?
No comment.
Fair.
You can pass if you want.
It was a good scene. I really fell for Aemon. But at the end of the scene, like the look on his face as he's walking away, I can't read what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Which troubles me because I am like fangirl. Aemon fangirl forever. But I'm just like, I don't know if you're offended. I don't know if you're pissed. I don't know if you're going to want revenge. I don't know if you're just going home because you're satisfied. I don't know if you're just tired and you're going to go take a nap. Like, I have no idea what's going on in that pretty little hair head of yours. Yes.
Yeah.
I think I had a read. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Emily.
No, I was just going to say that was a lot, the scene, for many reasons. But yeah, I really loved Aemon in that scene. I feel like he was thinking and feeling a lot of different things, but I do think, you know, obviously he was bullied a lot by Aegon growing up. Mm-hmm. And so there's that whole thing. And Aegon is hilarious in that scene because he's just so wasted and being so mean.
Yeah,
but him, I feel like him finally then getting up, walking out straight up nude is him like trying to assert his dominance, but then
totally
being a total emo boy crying. Like, I don't, it's all the things together, which I find so interesting.
We know he cares for this prostitute. He's seen her like a ton. He goes like every night. We know he doesn't mean it when he says,
oh yeah,
one whore is much like the other. He's posturing. Mm-hmm. He's been caught in a moment of vulnerability by his childhood bully, and he's doing anything he can to armor himself, despite the fact that he has completely bare ass naked, letting it all hang out on a popular TV show. Do we need to talk about the nudity? Could we just, I mean, it was there, man, was it ever there? And then it was over. More than Game of Thrones, even, I think. I don't think any main Game of Thrones cast member was just that naked for that long. No male, I should say, sorry, because there are actually quite a few women.
Roz would like a word.
I think it's I'm
pretty sure Theon was very naked at one point in season one.
Oh, he was, but he was in the shadows. I may have thought about this after I first watched the episode and went back and looked at some other Game of Thrones scenes to just cross-reference things. I'm not sick, I'm not weird, it's fine, it's my job. It's normal.
And yes, Julie points out Hodor was too. Hodor, fun fact, had a prosthetic penis on Game of Thrones. That was not actually Hodor. I think the thing that so obviously the nudity of it all was, I agree with kind of what everyone has said about that, almost is a step farther than Thrones even took it. And especially with some of the background stuff. But I think
foreground.
The thing that I'm really curious about, so there were a few things with that scene. One is this is not really a spoiler because we've seen in the next episode that both Vhagar and Sunfire are going to be taking wing. You know, we won't talk about the details of how that would be, but they're both in the preview. So we know both dragons will be in episode 4. And now I'm curious, the way they show up in Fire and Blood and what happens next is kind of presented as they planned this thing. Mm-hmm. Vhagar and Sunfire are both relevant to it. I'm curious if either Aegon or Aemond, if there's going to be some kind of tension there where one of them is going off and doing a thing they said they wouldn't. Yeah. And I think they almost kind of set that up this episode with how Aegon really embarrasses Aemond, and Aemond just storms out with this look on his face like, I'll show you. And both of them basically get told, you know, Kristen tells Aemond, you know, Vhagar needs to stay here. And then Larys manipulates Aegon, Sunfire needs to stay here, and you need to stay here. So I'm going to be very curious to see how that spills out into episode 4. The other thing that someone pointed this out on our Wednesday stream this week, that they wondered if the brothel madam was going to end up being Gaemon Palehair's mother. So Gaemon Palehair is Aegon's bastard who was in the fighting pits in the Green Council episode in the King's Landing in Flea Bottom. Mm-hmm. And I almost, on the second watch, because I've seen this episode a couple of times, I almost think this episode could be setting that up a little bit more too, because Aegon kind of like, when he's looking for this prostitute, he's trying to remember her name. Like, he points out that that was Aemond's first. It's kind of alluded to that it might have even been Aegon's first time was with that brothel madam, or at the very least, he had been with her. They did a lot of interesting, very subtle ground laying in this episode, and I liked that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Not bad. We've kind of front-loaded a lot of the most interesting scenes first, which I think is fine. Let's talk about some of the more, because this was, somebody said in the chat, it was a good setup episode. It was a lot of setup.
Yeah.
I do like it. Again, it which sort of made it feel more like Game of Thrones to me again. Like there was in House of Dragons season 1, you kind of had all these individual things that would jump ahead a few years. And in this one, everyone's moving. I will say my interest in Kristen Cole continues to grow. He continues to not infuriate me. I continue to be okay watching him because he's moving things along. I appreciate that he's taking an army out of the city to go somewhere to turn some houses. And that shot of like the army moving out of the city, I was like, okay, we got some movement. Things are happening. And I enjoyed
Kristen was competent.
And you know what?
He was competent this episode.
He seemed competent, yeah. And you know what really
he
helps?
He saved Gwaine.
I mean, yeah. What if he hadn't? You know what always makes a character feel more sympathetic? Putting him next to one who's even worse. So I think introducing Allison Hightower's brother, who's kind of this prep school, self-superior, smug guy, and then making him make a dumb mistake and Kristen kind of pulls his butt out of the fire. I feel myself sort of sympathizing with Kristen.
No.
Yes, because there's no other option.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the scene where they got chased down by Baelith. That was fun.
I loved Gwaine in this episode. I'm just going to say it. I loved him. I thought the acting, like I loved his line reading. I thought he got really great dialogue. And I was just, maybe because I'm so anti-Kristen Cole that I'm like, yes, put him in his place. And I know he made a mistake, but whatever. It didn't make Kristen look good to me. I like Gwaine. So that's me.
Yeah, I agree.
Kristen stuff runs deep.
I still very much dislike the Kristen Cole. I'll call him Kristen because he actually did something this episode. So Kristen Cole. But no, it forever one of my least favorite characters, just because one, Fabian plays him so well. And he was so written, just so nastily written. But I really enjoyed the line, sadness is a condition of motherhood, that Allison tells Helena. And boy, did I feel that in my soul for a hot minute. I think every single mom kind of set the TV and was like, damn, all right. You know, but it was It was a very like deep moment with Helena, and Helena just seems so damaged. I feel so bad for her.
What did you make of that scene, Camilla? Because I'll be honest, that one I was a little confused by, because Helena did seem damaged, but she,
right,
seemed like she was like trying to rationalize her pain.
She was trying to rationalize. She's trying to compartmentalize things, and she's like failing miserably because she doesn't know, like, very much sadness is a condition of motherhood explains how Allison poorly raised the kids. Like, not very there, not very emotional, not very caring, at least from what we can tell. And I think that Helena, not knowing how to like comfort herself in the situation, is just coming up with excuses to keep herself present and like keep herself like, what's the word? Like, none of this is her fault. Which,
functional?
Right. Yeah, functional. Yeah. And the I forgive you moment is like, did she forgive her, like Allison, for feeling like she should have been there? Did she forgive Allison for sinning? Did she forgive Allison for being a shit mom? Like, what is
there? There are so many options. You know?
I think she forgives Allison for banging the guard who should have been on duty. That was my read on that scene. Was I was lucid enough that I do understand why you feel so guilty, which is because you are partially responsible.
I did like that it left it ambiguous enough that like you could contemplate. I guess Allison's done a lot of bad stuff that she could be forgiven for, hasn't she? Okay, great. In relation to her parenting skills. Speaking of Allison, we got one question. Sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, she's just a giant victim of situation as well.
Yeah.
We got a good question from Leo, which I was wondering about too. What do we make of I guess you love talking about Kristen and Allison so much that they're the ship of the season. I liked the bit where he asked for her favor and she gives it as like unenthusiastically as humanly possible. Just like,
while Gwen watches.
While Gwen watches.
Gwen
clocked that.
I didn't feel like it was. I didn't feel like it was just whatever. Take it. I felt like I was like, oh yes, please do take it. And she was just trying to act like it wasn't anything, but her face was very loud. Yes.
I didn't read it that way. The show was interesting because it has a lot of moments like this where it's pretty subtle.
Yeah,
I read it as, I don't want to be impolite, but I'm mad at you right now. But here, fine. But you guys read it as she was into the romance.
Well, I think so, because I mean, this could be the last time she sees him.
Yeah, he's running off. It felt like very like elementary school. You're teasing each other, but you really like each other. Like, oh, I guess I'll give it to you. And the smirk he gave her after, I was like, this is the most flirting they've done,
right? The whole
season, which was
properly,
Like, are they in love? What's going on?
Right, exactly. That are they in love thing popped into my mind too.
I thought it was an interesting callback as well. So I do agree about the ambiguity. I love that, where it's just like a thing happened and you can kind of read into the different performances. I kind of felt like I was somewhere in the middle, like Allison being asked to do that publicly when she was ready to storm off kind of set her on her back foot a little bit, but she was also a little flattered that he was asking. So there was a little bit of push and pull. But I did love the callback of that. So in the series premiere, where there's the joust for King Viserys's son with Emma Arryn was supposed to be born that day, so they had a big joust for it. Kristen gets, if I remember right, Rhaenyra's favor at that joust. And they were both talking about him and that he's a Dornishman and this and that. And Daemon gets Allison's favor, which after unhorsing Gwen, he asked for Allison's favor. So I thought this was an interesting callback for Kristen and Allison, where he's now asking Allison for her favor. And that almost like probably gets off some deeply seated, like whoever said it was high school or elementary, like kind of pulls those feelings back up from her teenage years of wishing Kristen had gotten her favor then instead of Rhaenyra's. So yeah, it's naughty. Naughty with a K.
We got it.
I liked that.
Disliking Rhaenyra has been a major driver in Allison's life, as well as Kristen's life. So, in a way, they are kind of made for each other. Yeah. I don't know if I want those two kids to make it or
I
not.
I agree. I painfully agree.
Way they're perfect. Julie agrees with you, by the way, that she cares more than she wants to admit. What do we think of... We got a bunch more of Bela and Reyna, Daemon's daughters, and Rhaenyra's stepbrothers episode.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Loved that.
Camilla?
Loved that.
What do you think? So basically, they're being sent to... So Rhaenyra's being sent away to the Vale to watch over Rhaenyra's younger kids. Yeah. Bela's sticking around to do her scouting thing. Camilla, did you buy the sisterly bond? Were you affected?
No, but the way... I cried that scene where Rhaenyra saying bye to her kids. Emma just embodied motherhood so hard. They went so hard in the scene, and it's in the subtle little details. And I just remember watching it thinking like, oh my God, what if I were to send my two away and like never see them? And I just lost it. Like, it was such a powerful like moment to witness her saying goodbye and asking Rhaena like to be the mother to them that she could never be. Like raise them and stuff. It's like, oh, it was such good scenes and moments, but I don't know. I don't know if I like Bela that much. I don't know. She hasn't impressed me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
I don't think so. They both feel a little bit generic. They haven't really dug into them too much. I think that there's more characters in this show in general than on Game of Thrones that are feeling just a little, I don't know, flat-ish.
Yeah. I do like that Bela was basically like her father's daughter with, I didn't initiate contact, kind of, sort of, not really, yeah. LOL. Well,
that was her best moment by far. Yeah.
And Rhaenyra was like, what? that was great. Barry Daemon.
I thought the Rhaena thing was interesting on a few levels. So I liked that we got more of them because I do agree that they've been kind of underdeveloped, but like the only way that's going to get better is giving us screen time with them. Yeah. So I was glad that this episode did it. I did think it was very, very shrewd of Rhaenyra that, you know, so the whole reason they're going to the Vale is because Jace promised Jane Arryn a dragon to help protect the Vale against other dragons in return for her support. But Rhaenyra can't send her a fighting age dragon, so she's going to send her two youngest kids with their baby ass dragons that can't do anything yet. So that's a very shrewd political maneuver, and like, you know that Jane Arryn is going to be unhappy about that. And so I like that they did kind of set that up, and Rhaenyra kind of gives Rhaena's parting words, like, you have to, like, you remind her of the vow she swore. Like, that's kind of on you. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sending you
a job
to convince Arryn. Yeah, it is an important job. There was also an interesting line there where, if I caught it right, Rhaena was supposed to write to one
Prince
of
Reggio
the
of Pentos.
Princes of, I think, Pentos.
Yeah.
Prince Regia. Yeah, Regio. So she was potentially going to keep going on past the Vale eventually. But yeah, I liked seeing the eggs too. So there was scene did a lot of heavy lifting. And if I remember right from the book, I think Jace is the one who sends Joffrey and Aegon away.
Because Rhaenyra's kind of like,
so they're giving Rhaenyra a little bit of Jace's stuff. Yeah. And they've rearranged some things a little bit. And I liked all of that. Natalie, what was your read on the Rhaena stuff and Bela?
I agree. I think they both have been underdeveloped, but I still like them. I also really love Bela and Jace, that dynamic. So I think I like Bela a little more just because we've seen her more. But I liked it. I liked how Rhaena was so against the idea just because real. Like, that's just so realistic that someone's like, I don't want to make this sacrifice. I want to be with my family. And then, you know, once she saw the dragon eggs, it was kind of like I actually do have an important job. So I did like it. I thought it was quick enough. And yeah, like you guys are saying, it really sets up other things. But tell me about the dragon eggs. Are they Daenerys's eggs? Like, this is something I didn't even think about. And then we talked about it briefly, and I'm seeing people on Twitter talk about it. Explain this to me. What are the dragon eggs?
Daniel,
you
want to
take this, Dan?
I'll do it. Probably no. I mean, so just in crazy Dorcas Game of Thrones Song of Ice and Fire lore, It is thought that Daenerys's three dragon eggs come from an earlier point in Westerosi history when a lady named Alyssa Farman, who is involved in some kind of lesbian love affair with some kind of Targaryen, takes them to Essos. I forget all the exact details, but those are the
eggs. She sells them to the Sea Lord of Braavos.
Yeah.
So it's speculated that those three eggs that Alyssa stole got passed around the free cities until Illyrio Mopatis eventually bought them. But he also does say they're from a Shai, if I remember, in the show and in A Game of Thrones. So it is left ambiguous. But these eggs, so they say, I think Rhaenyra says this, that Rhaena is taking their hope with them. So we saw Daemon find some eggs last season. So I think it's just kind of, these are not Dany's eggs, but there is this thought that like there aren't really a lot of dragons hatching right now. And all the dragons are about to go to war and probably kill each other. So this is the best hope we have for the future to still have dragons. Are these ones you're taking? And Rhaena, let's not forget, doesn't have a dragon yet. Yeah. That's been a huge, that's basically her one big character thing up until now is she doesn't have a dragon and has a whole thorny mess of feelings about it because her dad
had another little character weird because she doesn't have one.
I mean, I would too. I got a bit. If everybody and my grandmother had one and I didn't, I'd be pretty sad.
Surely that's why you like Aemon so much. Dragons.
That was his thing too.
That's true.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say, did you guys clock the Daeron Targaryen reference? Because we did number get two. Another one. Yeah. He's really in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Daeron, Ryan Condal, the showrunner, he did confirm Daeron is not in this season. So we're going to get more references like this. And he also made it sound like Tyrion is Daeron's dragon, is just barely big enough to ride, which I think is interesting because they've aged some of the dragons up a little bit, up and down. Like Moondancer is bigger than Moondancer should be. Daeron's still around. Anyway,
after Millie Alcock showed up after saying she wouldn't, you can't trust anything anymore. Nope. I think Daeron will be in the show, played by Jaden Smith, and Tessarion will be a fully grown dragon. It's going to happen maybe at the midway mark. We've hit a lot of angles. I'll quickly mention that I continue to like my Saria more than I used to.
I like the bit where
Rhaenyra was like, what do you know about Alison Hightower? She's like, why? You want her dead? We can kill her. Did you know that? I'd kill this afternoon. She's like, no, that's fine. So she was more likable. So that's improvement there. I'm glad about that.
Yeah.
The only other thing, I also really like the Blackwood bracket thing. I thought that was fun. Hard cut from Utes in their little color-coded outfits arguing to the aftermath of a bloody battle. What a stirring image.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the cut there was a good choice. I was kind of expecting to see the battle just because that scene of the Blackwoods and Brackens kind of arguing has been in a few trailers now. So I just assumed we'd have a battle. But that it reminded me of the battle in Game of Thrones in the first season where Tyrion gets knocked out by his hill tribe men and then they just cut to after the battle. And it's also like they also just couldn't really waste a budget on another big scale battle when they didn't really need one. So I thought that was a really good idea. And I also think it's interesting. I've seen a lot of people speculating that the Blackwood guy who really starts the fight by, you know, stirring the pot is Benjikot Blackwood. I don't know if we've had that confirmed yet. I know the actor kind of teased that it could be, but he couldn't say anything till after the episode. But so Benjikot he becomes the person who runs House Blackwood because Lord Samwell Blackwood dies at the Battle of the Burning Mill. And that did happen in the episode. The small council meeting does confirm that Lord Samwell Blackwood did die at that battle. So I'm curious if we're going to see that actor again and he actually survived the Battle of the Burning Mill.
I thought that it was him just based on all of the things on Twitter. Like everyone was posting the photo of him and I was like, okay, it's going to be him. But I had this
it looks like him.
On. It does. I had the subtitles on when I watched it tonight though and someone called him Davos. So I was like, oh never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah, got to put on the tinfoil hat and really dig into that one. Because I mean, that would make sense because Benjacot Blackwood isn't at the Battle of the Burning Mill in the book. That's like the whole reason he doesn't die. He's like 11 and he's just not there. And then he takes over and he becomes like this child, like wild kid ruler who's like murdering a bunch of greens in the forest. So I'm curious to see what they do with that. I also wanted to clock, this is the first time we've heard the word dragon seed in the show.
Yeah,
when Ulf is explaining that he's Viserys and Daemon, he's their bastard brother from Jaehaerys's son Baelin. So dragon seeds, they're coming. We've got a reference.
I wish that scene was funnier. I wish they like made him more of like the crank at the bar who just goes on about like, yeah, I'm related to George Washington, and just like no one believes him. But it was good. I liked him. And obviously Ulf, if you've read the book, he'll be a bigger part going forward.
Yeah.
I feel like anything else anybody wants to say about this episode? Episode 3, The Burning Mill is what it's probably called.
It was very good. It's a solid one for sure. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I like it too. I thought it was a solid episode. Yeah. I liked it.
Very much.
And I'm hoping it will be even better in context after some people shed some blood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I think it was a necessary break before things really go wild next week. So in the overall pace of the season, looking back, we're probably going to be like, we needed a sister act episode to help us catch our breath from the Cargill death to whatever's coming next week, which is going to be a wild one. Make sure to come back and join us next week because we're going to have so much to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll see. You can see along with us because we are here every Sunday after each new episode of House of the Dragon to break down all the goings on of every installment. Don't join us here at the Winners Coming YouTube or Facebook channel after the episode. We'll try to be on like, 10 minutes-ish after they end, 5, 15, somewhere in that range. Hop on and talk with us. Also, we have a YouTube, Facebook live show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time in those same places. Take the Black Life. We talk about House of the Dragon, sure, but also other things of sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, that kind of thing. Hope to see you there. We're also available in podcast form. Download our podcast. Leave a like. Leave a comment. We love talking with you. This was fun. Thank you, Camilla, Natalie, and Daniel, of course. I had a great time. And in closing, I'll just say, bring on House of the Dragon episode 204 and bring on Sister Act 3.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.